Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The Nazi regime of Adolf Hitler is hardly one to be admired, but its ability to use propaganda in a most effective way has to be acknowledged. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the program. But first, the role of effective leadership in shaping and sustaining strong, inclusive communities is not an easy task, and we can point to many parts of our own area that could stand some improvement there. Our guest on today's program is an expert on urban planning, city management, and local governance, and the author of Leading the Inclusive City, Place-Based Innovation for a Bounded Planet. He's Professor Robert Hambleton, Professor of City Leadership at the University of the West of England. Also with me in studio is Todd Swanstrom, the E. Desmond Lee Endowed Professor of Community Collaboration and Public Policy Administration at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Robin, welcome to our country.
Thank you.
Let me ask you just to clarify one thing for me, if you would, and that is your definition of bounded planet that you use in your subtitle.
Okay. Part of the book is about trying to encourage cities to be more sustainable in terms of then environmentally sustainable. So a bounded planet speaks to the fact that natural resources are limited and we can't just keep exploiting the planet and destroying it. So we need to bound our own behavior so we can live a good life on our planet.
Well, you're not really pointing primarily at our environment in your book. You're really more of a system of governance, inclusiveness, diversity, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you could say it's a bit ambitious, Don, but I've tried to cover the environmental challenges cities face, but also the socio-political challenges that you mentioned earlier in the introduction, where we seem to be creating very unequal cities that are really quite conflicted. And this is not just a US challenge. It's actually quite commonplace internationally.
Well, what's going on?
Well, I think we've got, I call it, a growth of placeless power. I slow down slightly because then people might be unfamiliar with the phrase. But many decision makers in modern life, because of globalization, make decisions without caring that much about the places that are affected by the decisions. So my book is trying to say, let's try and have more place-based power. Let the local people have more power than they have at the moment.
Todd Swanstrom, what do you make of all of this?
I think it applies to St. Louis. We've had, Budweiser beer here. We thought it was a homegrown company with roots in the region, and it got bought up by another company. McDonnell Douglas got bought up by Boeing. So we find in St. Louis that we have more of these international companies that don't have their headquarters here anymore and don't feel those roots. And they may contribute, you know, to services. They may do things for the region, but they're not really engaged at the top level in making sure that St. Louis succeeds.
How do we draw all of this down to Ferguson? I know that, Robin, this is something that you've had on your mind, you've been looking at. And Todd, being a longtime resident here, you have been too. How do we draw what you're talking about to the situation in Ferguson, which sits in the midst of a highly fragmented county?
Well, let me just say I'm not an expert at all on this wonderful city, but it is true, and I come from Bristol in the southwest of England. That's about 2 hours west of London. We've had our own troubles there in a prosperous city, often around friction between police and ethnic minorities. So the US is not alone in having that experience. There are a constellation of forces that create that friction. I think it's not just some behavior of some police officers or some particular incident. There are some forces at work that are creating more unequal cities, and therefore a lot of frustration builds up in places, and then suddenly a spark can ignite some real unrest. And we had quite bad urban riots in Bristol in 2011, not so long ago.
Todd, your take on that?
Oh, exactly. I mean, I find it extraordinary that if you go around the globe, it over and over again, urban riots have been kicked off by relationships between police and ethnic minorities, usually young males. And that has been the spark. But underlying that are some much deeper issues about poverty, about the lack of political representation. In the case of Ferguson, here you had a police force that was 50 out of 53 were white, and the community was two-thirds black. Something's going wrong there, and the relationship between leadership and representation in the administration of government, and Robin talks about this in his book.
Yeah, I think you've got to try and develop inclusive political processes so that people don't feel excluded. Easy to say, not so easy to do.
Well, they're certainly trying to do it in Ferguson with the recent election. There was evidence of a greater amount of inclusion. In fact, I have a quote here from you, Robin, saying inclusion should be the watchword in urban decision making.
Yes, I think I'd stand by that. Some colleagues would say, well, we need a competitive city, one that can prosper in a global contest for investment. And I'm not arguing against that. I think you do need to compete in a globalized world. But let's not forget what's happening to the different residents of our city and try and ensure the benefits reach everyone rather than just a small minority.
We have a particular situation here. I alluded to it a moment ago with regard to St. Louis County. It's comprised of 90 municipalities. Count them, 90 municipalities, 90 mayors, 90 city councils or aldermanic boards, 60-some-odd police departments, 24 or 25 fire departments, school districts. It's really... Todd, you're shaking your head. I was going to say it's really crazy. I shouldn't say that, but in a sense, you know, when an outsider looking in at something like that has to say, how in the world can this work?
Well, you know, Robin, we really borrowed this system of government from the Tudor polity that existed when we founded this nation. We had this sort of medieval system of local governments, which literally from the time of the Tudor kings, this very decentralized system. Later in England, you created a much more unified system where parliament, you know, exerts tremendous control over local authorities and how England is governed. But here we have this long tradition going back before the revolution of these local authorities. And in some ways it's good because it gives you many entry points, many places where you can get involved. But on the other hand, I would argue that often what happens is you can get involved, but it's a hollow prize. It's an institution that doesn't have the wherewithal to really grapple with the problems.
I think it is true that your city governance, the city region governance, is very fragmented. I think it'd be hard to disagree with that.
Sure.
In other countries, in my book, I talk about experiences in 14 different countries, and particularly European countries, I guess. Their higher levels of government, and certainly in the UK, have intervened to restructure local government so it's in bigger units that make more sense for political representation and public planning. So my suggestion, I hesitate to recommend, but the suggestion would be, can we not maybe integrate some of these very small municipalities into more effective units of government? Is this a possibility?
No. Todd, would you agree?
I think, interestingly enough, I think it's on the agenda. I don't think it was on the agenda before Ferguson, but being on the agenda is one thing and actually accomplishing it is another. I think that there is, with regard to the courts and with regard to police, I think there will be change, Don, in the months ahead. There's going to be some restructuring of the courts. This system, because what happened with the demonstrations and riots in Ferguson is that there was underlying anger, deep anger that tapped into, and it erupted. And I think the elite in St. Louis has been surprised by the ferocity of that reaction and a recognition that something needs to be done about the criminal justice system. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. The police are the tip of the iceberg. The deeper, you know, iceberg here that could hit the Titanic is this socioeconomic inequality and placelessness, places that don't have a strong identity and strong institutions.
This idea of consolidation, as you well know, Todd, has come up time and time again. And the reason it doesn't happen is because people ultimately are going to have to vote on it and have voted on it. They don't want it because they want to be close to their government. They'd rather know their city councilman and run into him or her in the barbershop or wherever rather than have one big mega government where they don't know the people that are governing them.
Yeah, but see, there's no reason why you can't have a larger government and still have grassroots participation and involvement. After all, the average ward in the city of St. Louis, which is a city of about 320,000, the average ward is about 11,000 people. That's pretty small. You can get to know your alderman or woman. So I think there's kind of a false sense here that smallness means, after all, we know the turnout in local elections has been abysmal. Awful. And part of that is because the voters sense that they aren't of sufficient capacity to address the issues that need to be addressed.
I think you're right with regard to certain changes with regard to police departments, law enforcement. That is happening, and with the municipal courts, no question about it. But in terms of making those 90 municipalities into 25, or you name a number, that doesn't seem to be in the works.
It might be difficult to do because of the history and the culture, and I can see what you're saying about rooted communities, but It might be helpful to try and think of, I call it multi-level leadership. So it's not like just one level of government's going to run a place effectively. There's multi-level. And in many cities, you have a neighbourhood governance system within a bigger city. Like Bristol, where I live, we have, it's about 420,000 population. Then within it, there are 14 neighbourhoods that really have quite a lot of influence over what happens in those parts of the city. Mm-hmm. So maybe that might win some friends in the city region here, where it wouldn't be we're taking power away from you folks. We're wanting to try and engage you in a multi-level process of governing the place.
Leadership is very important to you. It's referenced again and again and again in the book. How do you share leadership then in an environment like this?
Well, the easy answer is that leadership needs to be inclusive. I talk about leading the inclusive city. And I think some leaders are still a little bit out of date in the way they lead. There tend to be some leaders who are fairly autocratic in their approach to the task. And my experience is that really effective leaders reach out to other interests and voices and build a coalition around change. Now, in a conflicted city, this is sometimes difficult, but leaders are good at dealing with conflict. That's why their main area is, to deal with those challenges and bring people together in a new way.
Todd?
Yeah, well, politics is a messy business, and it's never perfect, but the alternative is really what we want to avoid, which is violence or force. So we have to kind of work through these. Now, in the St. Louis region, we've got numerous examples of governments working together, Don. We've got the Zoo Museum District. I took Robin on a tour of Forest Park, this gorgeous park, which is supported by a tax that's in the city and the county that includes, 91 municipalities in that case, the city of St. Louis as well. So Beyond Housing is doing this municipal government partnership where they have 24 municipalities. They're working together to get those municipalities to collaborate, and they're making progress. You kind of have to move them forward into collaboration. But the big thing here is not just services, but to do economic development and place building. I mean, what Robin mm-hmm. stresses, mm-hmm. we just drove around, the communities out near Ferguson, and often you get a sense of, they look pretty nice in some ways, but there's mm-hmm. a kind of placelessness. There's lack of identity, a place to convene, public spaces where people can rub elbows and get to know each other. Mm-hmm. I think that place idea is so important to think about here.
I do. I think it's important. I think in a way, in my career, I think we were more place-based in our decision-making. But as we've all experienced the last 30 years, globalization has really swept the planet. And this growth of power by people who are not engaged with the place is really a major issue. However, I want to be positive. In the book, I talk about 17 examples of inspiring place-based mm-hmm. leadership. And I think these stories are really important. They often go unsung. And so we've got excellent leaders in different cities showing us possibilities that perhaps get a bit left out of the media conversation.
We've done a number of programs here on the situation in Ferguson, the aftermath, and what's going on and where it's going. And one of the interesting things most recently has been talk about place-based situations is the fact that the Ferguson Public Library has become a very, very important place. It's become a community place mm-hmm. that it wasn't before. Mm-hmm. People gather there. They meet there. Kids are going there for the first time. It has suddenly become a place for people to convene, and that's become very important for Ferguson.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. You need something called third places, yes. places where people can just gather and mingle, and even though it doesn't mean that blacks and whites and rich and poor become buddies with each other, but they learn to interact and trust each other at a certain civic level and to collaborate on civic projects. And so I think in that often in these suburban settings, Don, you don't have the public spaces. You don't have the parks. You don't have the social agencies that parts of the city often have, which are just as deprived in parts of the city, but they've got more of the public spaces and the kind of infrastructure of collaboration, I think, that's important in place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we do have good experience in every city. I think sometimes we have to spotlight the troubles, and you have these challenges coming out of the incident in Ferguson. But obviously, there's a lot of great practice in the city that can actually help the city move forward as well.
I have to take a break now. We'll do that and come back and talk about cities and how they work. And our guest in studio is Professor Robert Hamilton, Professor of City Leadership at the University of the West of England. He's the author of Leading the Inclusive City. That's the book we're talking about here. And there's going to be an event right here at this building later today. I'll talk about that in a moment. Professor Hamilton is with me in in studio, as is Professor Todd Swanstrom of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to get into it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send us a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Professors Robin Hamilton and Professor Todd Swanstrom. Todd, just a quick question for you. I'm always curious to get the answer to this question from people like yourself. Who would you identify as are the leader of this community?
You know, I think it used to be the major corporate leaders that were Civic Progress, you know, the top 30 corporations in that. I had my students did a network analysis of leadership in St. Louis a few years ago, and what we found out is that it's no longer the big industrial corporations which are at the center of the relationships in the region. It's rather institutions like Washington University, Barnes Jewish Hospital, the major nonprofits, the ones that are more of the service based, who are looking for, you know, we now have this cortex phenomenon that's happening in the Central West End. We have Monsanto and more forward-looking corporations that are trying to move the region forward. So I think the leadership has shifted, especially I think, educational institutions and nonprofits are now playing much more of a leadership role.
Interesting that you don't mention a political leader.
I fear that, Don, in the case of the city of St. Louis, because it represents only about 11% of the population of the region, the mayor of St. Louis doesn't speak for the region the way the mayor Blasio of New York speaks for the New York region. So the way, even for that matter, Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, speaks for the Chicago region. I'm not saying making any comment about Francis Slay. I'm making a comment about the small size of the institution.
I understand. But it's very interesting. Robin, I'll put this to you. What do you make of this, the fact that we can't identify a single person as the, quote, political leader of this region?
Well, I'm really glad you've asked about that, because in the book I'm trying to develop this idea of what I call realms of leadership in any place. And a really successful city probably unites the different realms. And I guess, without getting too elaborate, I would suggest there are four. There are elected figures, politicians and councillors, who have the legitimacy to lead and are accountable. There are, as Todd rightly says, important business voices and business interests. But there are two other groups. There are the public servants employed by local government and the state and so on, where you've got people who are trained and qualified and often do not see themselves as leaders, but actually are. They've got a major part to contribute. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, really important, the communities who live in places, the activists, the religious organizations, the local voices that need to be part of leadership. So we've got, I think, four realms. If you bring them together, that's a really powerful combination.
It's a pretty diffused group, though, and difficult to bring together all of these voices.
True, and I think, therefore, the political structure that within which all this operates is quite critical, and you've described very clearly that there are some obstacles in St. Louis. But maybe that can be modified, and certainly in other countries, it's quite often the directly elected mayor who has a key convening role in bringing those groups together and making big changes, including in some countries where the resources are far less than we have in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a couple of phone calls. As time will allow us, we're bringing in some of our listeners, and we'll start with Eric calling from St. Louis. Eric, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to make a comment about Ferguson and this whole problem. My overall notion is that the automobile has been the main agent of fragmentation in St. Louis, especially for white plight. And after the, I have like two contrasting examples from my own life to tell you. One was that the week after the buildings burned in Ferguson and the verdict came out, I wanted to get a sense for myself what was going on up there. And I'm an avid bicyclist, so it was a beautiful Sunday afternoon. And I took my bike on a leisurely ride up that direction. People warned me not to. They said, "Oh, Eric, you're a white guy going into this area. You might be attacked, who knows what." So I'm biking along, and the opposite happened. The people saw me on the bike and struck up conversations. And it was a very, it was a beautiful experience for me because it made me realize that the people out there are just like people anywhere else. And I wonder if promoting bicycling and bike routes might be one way to break down these barriers and make the make more of a personal connection between people and communities. Now, my contrasting example...
Eric, we're running out of time. Make it very fast, please.
Okay. I was invited to go to a talk by the mayor on the city-county merger, and it was held at the Ladue, at the St. Louis Country Club in Ladue. And I was actually detained by the police in Ladue because it looked suspicious. Riding back to St. Louis Country Club.
All righty, Eric, thank you for the call.
Can I make a quick comment on that? Thank you for your comments, Eric. I think one of the things I found out studying cities in other countries is that public transport and actually cycle routes and walkable, talk about walkable cities, is really important in building the inclusive city. In my own city, we're quite proud. Bristol is the cycling capital of the UK. We've got a lot of networks, and our mayor is really positive on enlarging and developing those routes. And like you say from your first story, that builds opportunities to connect and meet people. So I think public transport's really important, along with cycling and walking.
And I would say that a lot of people, like Eric, have discovered driving through by whatever means in places like Ferguson that there really are a lot, awful lot of nice people there.
Absolutely.
And a lot of nice places to go, Todd.
Exactly. And, you know, I think one of the interesting, you know, the points about the automobile is I think the suburban setting, as the poor increasingly live in suburbs, it's really quite a challenging environment for poor people because everybody in the family has to have a car to get to their job. You have to drive everywhere. There aren't the bus connections, the Metrolink connections that you have in other parts of the city, or you can't walk to a job as easily. So I think it's really kind of a cruel kind of hoax almost on the poor. They think that they can live in the suburbs and just do just as well when you have to have, you know, an expensive automobile to make it every. And one way to deal with Ferguson, I've been talking about this for months, is we should build the next extension of Metrolink north-south, connect Ferguson and those communities in North St. Louis City and County to the prospering jobs at the core.
Well, you weren't here when Metrolink was first being talked about, and there are a lot of people who thought it was a good idea, but they didn't want to have anything to do with it because they, I'm finger quoting now, they might come from the city or other poor places to our neighborhood. And that was a big, big problem
development. You know, Don, when they were first developing the Great Rivers Greenway, was developing the bike trails, a lot of these suburban communities said they didn't want trails because they said, them will come out here. They'll come out here in our community. But you'll notice now they're all looking for hiking and biking trails because they've recognized their value.
Let's take one more call. We'll bring in Frank calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Frank.
I have two questions.
Very quickly, please.
The first one is I hear both you and your local guests saying that various municipalities and school districts in St. Louis County should think about consolidation. And we know that New York City extended its boundaries by consolidating with neighboring communities such as Brooklyn. We know that London grew by consolidation, Chicago grew by consolidation, Los Angeles grew by consolidation. Can we say that as a result of that consolidation, the slums are smaller, the schools are better? What does consolidation actually promise any better results? And then the second thing is, if your guest from Bristol could give us some concrete, as opposed to theoretical examples of what he's really talking about. I don't really understand what his thesis is, even though I know he's already stated it. I'm just a little slow on the uptake.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thanks for that question, Frank. I'm trying to suggest that if we can get the different interests in a city collaborating more effectively, and it requires leadership to do that, we can have much more prosperous, sustainable, safe cities. And maybe I should just give a vivid example. Melbourne would be a city I would pick, where the centre of the city was more or less dead at night and actually very unsafe. Local leaders collaborated and created a very positive public realm. They attracted local businesses, put more housing in, and actually created a much more inclusive city. And now The Economist rates Melbourne as the most livable city in the world, I think 5 years in a row. And it wasn't like that in the past, so the story is local leadership can really transform a city.
I'm going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. It can happen, it can work, and let's hope that we can see it working a little bit better than it has on occasion in our own area. Thank you so much, Professor Robin Hamilton and Todd Swanstrom. Thank you so much for being with us. A reminder now, we've mentioned this before, that Professor Hamilton will be participating with a local panel at an event this evening titled Leading the Inclusive City, Lessons for St. Louis. That's going to be held right here at UMSL at Grand Center on Olive from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Todd, there are spaces available?
Yes, there are.
All right.
Good. We welcome more.
All right. Well, come on by. 4:30 to 6, 4:30 beyond, no, 4:30.
4:30 to 6 and then a reception following.
Okay,
yep.
Great. All righty. That's right here at Grand Center on Olive. Thank you again, Professor Hamilton. Thank you, Todd Swanstrom. Coming up, a look at the power of Nazi propaganda. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.